Unspoiled Network podcast.
This is Spoil Me, covering One Piece, episodes 306, 307, and 308. This is a three-episode shot, ladies and gentlemen. And in this episode, well, these three, we have got a mermaid turning up, which delighted me, but I have to admit, I was very bummed by everybody's reaction. Welcome to Spoil Me. Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Natasha. Thank you very much to Bernadette for commissioning this episode, which was supposed to be recorded yesterday. I wound up with an outage because we had a storm and I had to push it to the next day. So appreciate, once again, people being flexible. I have had to move things around a lot lately. Sorry about that. But here we are. And I'm glad, very glad, that this episode is covering three, because these were real drawn out and it felt like I was just sitting there waiting for something to happen a few times. But I did really enjoy some of the big moments. I'm curious about certain things and how we're like, y'all know that sometimes I get impatient with the like formulaic quality of like, okay, now we beat these bad guys and we're leveling up to these other bad guys. And there is a part of me that feels a little bit this way by the end of this trio of episodes, but I am also like looking forward to actually seeing what some of these marine folks can do, the admirals especially. So there's a part of me that's sort of like, oh man, really? I thought we had like kind of reached the end of this arc, or we're getting close to it. And it looks like they could really milk another like six episodes out of this, at least, if they felt like it. And I really don't know if they do feel like it, or it might be like way longer than that. And I've been really enjoying this arc so much, but I find myself now starting to like get weary of it. We're really reaching a point where the fight between Lucci and Luffy, even with adding in Luffy's like second and third gear powers, mostly the fights have not felt very different from the fights several episodes ago. There have been the big moments of like particular hits that Luffy has made, but otherwise, even Lucci's like, oh, you haven't seen what I can do. Here's an extra superpowered version of that. It still kind of looks the same. It doesn't really like hit that differently, pun intended. And other than that, like, I'm just relieved at least that we've had like the storylines with everybody in the tunnels to sort of break things up. But I feel like we're getting to a point now. Normally when we've got everybody grouped together, I am excited to see the way that they all interact with each other and the way that they work together, but it looks like we're not really going to get that here. They're all together, but they're all fighting their own separate battles, and they all are like, they feel like they're separate, even though they're technically not. So I don't know. We'll see how this goes. August says they're vice admirals, by the way. Okay. How many, this is one of those questions. How many vice admirals are allowed? Like, I also had this at when I worked at a bank. Y'all do not know how many vice presidents there are at banks. It is crazy. Like, at first when I heard that somebody was vice president of blank, 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 I was impressed. And then I started to realize that that just was like almost a meaningless title because fucking everybody had it. So yeah, the vice admiral thing, like they're all vice, like how... That's a lot of vice admirals. I don't know how things work in real life and if this is a similar, you know, how many people in life have that title. Is it like this? I don't know how that works. But anyway, okay, let's back it up here and we will start from the beginning. Episode 306. So to start off, we've got Luffy, who is tiny after his third gear power-up. And he is laying there and kind of trying to figure out exactly how long he's going to be like this. And his estimate is that however long he used the third gear power for, he will be small for an equal amount of time. And he says something like, I know that this is like a powerful ability, but it really does have some big drawbacks. And I was wondering if this power, if he'll ever be able to figure out how to use it without this side effect. I'm like, a part of me is like, I really hope not, because him being tiny is a pretty good gag. Like, I actually enjoy there being a significant drawback to an ability that is that OP. On the other hand, I wouldn't be mad if they have him like learning to do something in a new way and finding a way around it. The thing about this show that I find kind of like frustrating, and I think that this is the more that I watch of this show, the more I recognize how much of an influence it was on Cradle and the Cradle series. I realize that the way people grow in their fighting style doesn't feel satisfying to me, because I'm used to storylines that sort of focus on growing in that area and training and everything that you have to do in order to improve yourself in a way that's like going to turn up eventually, and you're excited as an audience member or a reader to see what your protagonist, who has been like really working on this new technique, how it looks when they finally perfect it and bust it out during a fight. And in this show, it's like they just bust things out of nowhere that we have never seen or heard before. It's very rare that we get a sort of like sneak peek that they're working on something or planning something. And so there isn't really a sense of excitement for me when there's a new ability beyond just wanting to see what it can do, because the anticipation was never there. So it feels like it was just pulled out of a hat with no struggle and no, you know, like Luffy is, he goes from not being able to do second and third gear to suddenly doing them with no mention at all of training or figuring out any of this. And I don't know if we're going to get a flashback later that explains this, or if it's just not something that the show really focuses on at all. But I feel like considering the fact that the show does have, like, it leans so hard on these fight scenes, I find it really weird that we don't spend more time with training or with our friends, like experimenting with what they can do with their powers and talking things over with their friends. Like, if you were on the crew and you knew Luffy had rubber abilities, wouldn't you just like sit with him and bullshit and brainstorm about all of the like wild things that he could maybe do with his weird body? And I feel like Luffy would be very receptive to that and would definitely like experiment to see what worked and what didn't. And I just think it's odd, because you guys, you know, frequently will talk about how certain things get really drawn out and they do that to not catch up with the manga. And I'm wondering, like, that feels like that would be an interesting thing to watch and cool content. But I don't know, maybe there's just something about, because, you know, guys, I'm used to watching and reading in a certain, like, mindset of what I enjoy in terms of, like, building a story and an arc. Is it just that, like, in anime, a surprise is valued more than, like, something that has got a lot of foreshadowing to it? That's the part that, maybe that's part of it, is for me, just pulling something out as a surprise doesn't feel legit to me. But it may be that I just don't really see things through the same lens, and pulling things out as a surprise is considered like a really clever storytelling tactic and device. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, this is something that, like, as we're getting, like, even further into everybody leveling up on their skill sets and what they can do, I want to see more from their training and more from their cooperation with their friends and sort of brainstorming, because that's the fun stuff to me. And it's also a really good opportunity to, like, play with the characters and their interactions with each other, which you guys know is, like, my bread and butter. I love the way characters interact with each other, especially once you've gotten to know them. And so I am feeling like, well, there's so much here. There's so much that could be done. And I wonder if, like, that was part of what inspired Will White to start doing Cradle, was that he saw the potential there as well and was like, yeah, I'm going to do something that actually sort of capitalizes on that aspect of it a lot more. There's a bunch of people in the chat. I'm sorry. So Florian says, the men who jump onto the bridge are captains, smoker status, and there are 5 vice admirals who command them from the ships. Okay, Seraphim says, One Piece is pretty unique among shonen of its time, for how little it focuses on training arcs, just letting the characters figure things out as they go. Florian says, I think Oda just does not find it fun to focus on training, so it kind of misses in the story. Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand what's not fun about it. Like, training can be super boring, but it doesn't have to be. And if you're going to be as bonkers with everything else as he is, I find it very bizarre that he has such an imagination. You would really think he'd be able to, like, pull out some extremely wacky, fun training stories and scenarios. Gus says, the trope of anime is that training is usually shown. Most anime. Okay, gotcha. So this is a real departure. That's interesting. Like, how do you guys feel about that? Are you glad? Like, do you not find the training stuff interesting either? Or... And again, like, I know that training can be boring depending on how you decide to write it. Don't get me wrong. Like, training in real life is super boring, but it doesn't have to be anything like real life in a world like this. So I'm just curious if I'm the only one who feels this way about Luffy busting out Gears 2 and 3. Like, was anybody else sort of going, wait, what? Or... asking questions about it. It's like, not only do we not have any real lead up to him pulling this out, but we don't get an explanation of what even is happening to him when he's using them until so much later after he's used it, that I was sort of like, there's almost a feeling, and I don't think this is true, but it almost feels as if the powers were put into the story before the author had quite decided what was actually happening. So he was like, well, I need him to be able to pull something out right now to beat this guy, but I'm not sure what I'm going to say is happening, so I'll figure that out later. But I don't think that's it, because otherwise the specificity of him, like, being bright red and steaming the way he does probably wouldn't be the way it was depicted if it wasn't, like, already clear in his head. Gus says, the thing about Gear 2 and 3, as far as we know through dialogue from Luffy, is that Luffy kind of just thought them up after he realized he couldn't beat Aokiji. Like, he could have done them before if he had thought of them, but he wasn't, because he thought he was strong enough. There's even a movie, non-canon, that has the origin of Gear 2nd being that something heavy fell on Luffy and it compressed his legs and he just found out on accident. Now, see... if that were in the show, that would be one thing. Like, you know, but I don't, like, you're saying, Gus, as far as we know through dialogue from Luffy, and I believe you that that's in the dialogue, but I will be honest with you, I don't recall where that was said. So forgive me. I genuinely, that is not part of the whole picture in my head. Serafin says it's mostly seen as a positive, since a lot of the times the training arcs do feel padded out or dull, but there are times that it leads to things feeling like they came out of nowhere only to be answered later in the story or via Oda directly in a Q&A. That's extra weird. Like, if it's not answered at all and Oda has to answer in a Q&A, I would be real irritated by that. Like, come on, man, you can't even be bothered? Gus says, I like brainstorming moments, but training arcs where you just see them sparring and stuff is kind of boring to me after watching other anime that do that a lot. Yeah, and I'm wondering, like, so agree, first of all, Gus, with just, like, sparring and whatnot. The brainstorming thing, I think, could be a really fun bit. The training doesn't even have to be sparring. It could just be, like, you know, a sort of adventure that feels like it's one of the filler episodes, but that's where they discover something that they can do because of a silly little side quest. But it's just interesting to me because I'm not an anime watcher that I don't necessarily have some of like the feelings that y'all do because I haven't been exposed to like multiple storylines that do something in a way that I find tedious. And I wonder if I would have a really different reaction to this if I were coming from that place. You know, just the background that I have, I am so much more entrenched in like more serious high fantasy stuff or urban fantasy. And a lot of times urban fantasy is, there's like very specific rules and things going on that maybe it just has sort of made me feel like those things are a requirement. Seraphim says, we do get a small line from Luffy in the show that implies he figured out Gear 2 via watching CP9 pulling off their techniques. It's the same basic idea of their shave power, but his rubber body can take the strain of keeping that up far longer than anyone else could. Oh, wow, I don't remember that. Gus says, yeah, Luffy's dialogue was basically two lines, like, I want to try out this new move I thought up when first entering Enies Lobby, and then, quote, I realized I wasn't strong enough, so I figured out this new move, unquote, when he starts to fight Bluno. Man, I really wish that we got to see that, even if we didn't see him coming up with the idea. But we heard him say on the train, anything like, I'm not strong enough and I'm going to have to like really pull one out to be able to beat this guy. Even that would feel a little bit more satisfying to me. Like, I think that the problem with me wanting to see that is it sort of flies in the face of what Luffy's deal has been this whole time, which is that Luffy never says out loud that he can't beat somebody. And it would require him to say, as is, I am going to lose. So I need to step up my game. And he just doesn't really ever admit that. He'll say, I'll die if I have to. But it's never really accompanied by a sense of like inferiority. It's always, yeah, so I might die. So what? Of course, I'm going to do it anyway. Just a sort of bullish, I'll win no matter what, and even if I don't win, I still kind of won sort of attitude. So maybe I'm just wanting to see something from Luffy that humanizes him a little bit more, and the, you know, the way that his character is written is like, well, that's not who he is. And if that's true, then I guess I think that might be where the disconnect is for me, though, where I'm like, I wouldn't mind seeing Luffy not, like, being sure of himself most of the time, 95% of the time is even fine. But 100% of the time, I don't know, I don't need that. So, anyway, okay, so this whole thing, he's very small, and it gets into a whole thing where Lucci shows back up and is pretty much like, I don't want to have to fight you while you're this small, but I'm going to do what I have to do. And like, I get that it's really undignified, but I am going to have to take you out. And if I allow you to like regain your strength, then you can pull that shit back out again. And Luffy is like stuck in the wall when Lucci is about to come at him. And Luffy manages to like inflate his fist just in time, because it really does look like Lucci has got him dead to rights. Let's see. Oh, Seraphim says, plus Oda has made a point that we never get any thought bubbles showing what is going on in Luffy's head, since Luffy lets his actions speak for him. Sure. So you're saying, like, that sort of ties into my assertion of not really seeing him ever have doubts. I get that. So as this is all happening, as he is continuing his fight with Lucci, we go back to the Franky pirates, who are riding on the backs of Sodom and Gomorrah, who are riding on the shoulders of the giants. And there's an interesting moment here. This weird frog is remembering the moments when Kokoro was like, the bad guys came to take somebody away, like they took Tom. Do you want to be part of a fight or no? And this is like an ongoing sort of thing that we see multiple times, is her saying, so do you want, are you ready for a fight? And what happens with these guys in this trio of episodes is that they're like running for the shore. And I guess they were, and this is part of my bad orientation in terms of understanding where everybody's headed. What I've been thinking, and I want to make sure I have this right, is that the Franky pirates are basically running back to the front of the island. Is that right? So they're trying to get back to the way everybody came in and get back to the ships that they left out there. Is that correct? So they're heading over, and it seems like they just don't, they don't really know that the Buster Call and the Marines have like evidently completely encircled the island. So they come out the front gates and there are several ships standing there waiting for them. And the reaction of everybody is pretty much, well, we don't have anywhere else to go. And it was the kind of thing that I felt really weird about, because they're just standing there saying, well, they're not going to shoot us, are they? And I was like, well, why wouldn't they shoot you? Of course they're going to shoot you. You just invaded like Enies Lobby. It was a weird moment because they have the whole island behind them and they could turn around and hide, but we know that they're doing the Buster Call. So it's not going to feel particularly safe going into any of those buildings either. We've just been watching throughout both, or all three of these episodes, we're watching cannonballs hit buildings and just completely collapse them. So it's understandable why everybody just sort of is like, well, what's the point of going back there when we're going to die that way too? And so it results in them sort of just standing still on the beach, looking like, oh, please don't shoot me. But there's not really anything to actually be done, materially speaking. And eventually we see Polly, and he sort of rappels down off of the back of one of the giants and finds a transponder snail. And we don't see what it is that he does with it. Correct me if I'm wrong. But before he grabs it, he's having a bit of a monologue with a couple of the other guys there just about how it's the last day we're going to have. Like, he's accepting that they're all going to die. And then he sees the transponder snail. He jumps down and grabs it. And then we cut away. And there is an announcement. And this is really, like, heartbreaking, because Franky had just got through saying how he's certain his men are all going to make it out. That, you know, those guys always manage to find an escape, and they are going to be fine. And then there is an announcement saying everybody, all of those pirates are dead, and there's no chance that they survived with the damage that was done to that side of the island. And of course, Franky, like, everybody just has this moment of, I can't believe they're all dead. And I don't remember how many of them there's supposed to be. I think there's like 60 or like 50, somewhere in there. It's a significant number of people. And they're all like Frankie's family, and he didn't even know that they were here until like really recently, and was so certain that they would be just fine that the fact they all got at the same time when he really had faith in them is extra heartbreaking. Now, I'm saying all of this with the understanding that this is what Frankie thinks. But I do not believe for one single solitary moment that his men are all dead. What I'm assuming is that somehow they have managed to make the announcement about how they're all dead. And that's like complete bullshit. But they're just trying to get the rest of the Marines sort of off their guard and thinking that that step in the orders has been taken care of and that they don't need to worry about it anymore. I don't know how that would work. Just because you have a transponder snail doesn't mean that you can just completely override all other signals and take over, I don't think. So just him finding that wouldn't mean that they just can fool everybody, I don't think. I just want to keep emphasizing how unsure I am of my own statements here and that many asterisks. The way that One Piece works, it will fly very wildly from one end of the spectrum to the other in terms of how much it wants to let real world obstacles exist in their world. So there are times where something that I just assume isn't going to be a problem because of cartoon rules, they treat like it's actually a real thing they're going to need to figure out and deal with. And then there are times where I assume something is going to be a major problem and nothing of the kind ever even comes up because it's just, of course, hand waved that like, yeah, of course they're able to do that. So I don't know, but I just am not worried about the Frankie Pirates. Now, if I am wrong and the Frankie Pirates are indeed dead, I will genuinely be super bummed for him because they haven't done a ton recently, but I have grown to really like their can-do attitudes and their like very weird aesthetic. And also I just, after finding out the way that the giants were lied to and tricked into giving free labor, and that Sodom and Gomorrah, who are these like adorable monsters, that they were just helpless and passed out, I just really don't want that to be true. So I'm going to say that I think they're fine. We shall see. And I also want, they need to be fine because Frankie has gone through a lot. And if at the end of all of this, his entire crew is gone, I don't know what he does. Yeah, he could join the Straw Hats theoretically. I don't see it, though. Frankie is way too big a personality to be willing to serve under somebody like Luffy. I feel like right now, considering what he has seen Luffy is capable of, he is admiring of him and willing to listen to Luffy in the short term. But I don't think that is something that would be sustainable. So he needs a crew to go back to. And his crew needs to have been ingenious enough to figure something out for themselves. Or, if not his crew, at least Polly. And speaking of Frankie on this bridge, there is this whole thing with him and Spandam. So Robin is collapsed on the ground because of seeing the beginnings of this Buster Call that get put in motion. And it's basically triggering her into a panic attack sort of state. And so she's crumpled and kneeling on the bridge, and Frankie is looking at Spandam, and we have this sort of flashback about what happened to Tom. And I had wondered this, I was sort of surprised at the fact that we see Tom's being sentenced, but we don't actually see the sentence being carried out. We don't actually see when he being Frankie, stands in front of the train and puts himself on the spot so that he winds up so injured that he has to make himself into a cyborg. We don't see any of that. And I did think that that was sort of weird. And we're getting some of this filled in for us at this point. So Spandam, who unfortunately his swelling has gone down, You guys, I was really, really enjoying the way that he looked with his crazy blown up face. It was just tickling me. I loved it. I don't know if it was just getting to the reminder that he had had his ass handed to him like that. Maybe that was all it was. But honestly, I was so sad when we come into this episode and he pretty much looks fine again. I think he's got like a couple teeth still missing. No, I lie. He just crossed over my screen and all of his teeth have returned. So yeah, he just is basically back to normal. And it's weird because like when Frankie punches him, the line he says is, "My face can't get any more swollen." And I was like, it really can. It literally, like, we just saw it be a lot more swollen than it is right now, evidently. But yeah, he is talking about how, like, I can't believe that you would trust Robin with all the blood on her hands, which is hilarious. With all the blood on her hands, sir, what do you mean? Like, it's just so not self-aware. It's not a good argument. And then if you don't turn yourself in, the same thing will happen to you that happened to Tom. And this is when Frankie shoots that fist at him that's on the end of the chain. And so in response, what Spandam does is pull out his weird elephant sword called Funkfried, which I don't feel like I recall hearing the name of it before. And that is a hell of a name. I don't really know what to make of it. Like, because if it were spelled differently, it could be believably like a German type name, you know? But it's spelled like we just freed the funk kind of way. And I was like, what are we doing? What's going on with this? And this poor like elephant creature is put on the spot. So Spandam says, "I want you to fatally injure Robin, who is, you know, sitting over here with her guard down." And I wasn't really sure what to make of the fact that he is willing to fatally injure her, because the whole thing was supposed to be, I thought, that she can't die. And I guess that he's just like, we'll create an injury that's so bad that unless she gets immediate medical help from us, she will die, and so she'll be sort of like basically blackmailed into a position where she has to cooperate. But it was surprising to me how like quickly he was going for the jugular here. So he starts to shoot the sword at her, and Frankie steps between the sword that's like plunging forward and growing, and when the camera pulls back, Frankie has grabbed the front of the sword, which has grown to about the size of a real elephant, and Robin seems truly startled. She looks up and is like, the blade's like half an inch from her face, and she is just tuning back in, going, "Oh, is that for me?" Just a real like, "Oh, I was in another world for a second there. I'm so sorry. What did you just say?" And here now I'm looking. Spandam has gone back to having a swollen face and multiple teeth missing. So it just sort of goes back and forth, I guess. Yeah, it's fine. But this moment, so first of all, she's like so thankful to Frankie that he stopped it. And also, poor Funkfried is like upset right here. He's just, Frankie says, "You're an elephant." Sorry. Spandam says, "Funkfried, you're an elephant. You shouldn't be losing to him." And Funkfried just is so cute, guys. He's got his front feet on the ground and he is glowering at Frankie and seems like he's really determined to try and like do right by his boss. But then Frankie pulls out the cannon part from his hand, his wrist, and points it directly at his like eyeball and is basically like, "Put your fucking head back in order and stop being a sword, or I will blast you between the eyes." So Funkfried retracts his sword nose very slowly, and Seraphim in the chat says the problem you are having here is assuming Spandam is thinking about anything. I think you're right about that. Spandam is just, I can't get over how many bad calls he makes. Like, it's truly astonishing, and it's not like, what kills me is that there is a time in my life that I remember clearly where I would have felt like a man with his complete like lack of competence and basic understanding of psychology and consequences, I would have felt like this was totally unrealistic. And I think we've all grown to understand how actually more realistic a villain like he is than a villain who's really intelligent and a great planner and just has it together. Unfortunately, we want to think that villains are super smart because we want to believe that people only get away with doing evil shit because they are so good at hiding it and not getting caught and toying with people. And we do not like the concept, the very real reality of the fact that most people who do bad things get away with it because by and large, they are already so powerful that nobody gives a shit and nobody is going to do anything, you know? And so they wind up fucking up over and over again and ruining things for themselves and for everybody else because nobody has ever stopped them from doing the stupid shit that comes to their mind. And this made me think of, so I'm not going to harp on this for too long, but Elon Musk, this whole thing that's been going on with him purchasing Twitter and then firing and laying off a ton of people and making all kinds of claims about whose jobs were safe and then backing out on that. And there was an article that came out a few weeks ago at this point about how Elon is really so, so managed that everybody who works around him has to figure out how to appease him by making it seem like they're taking his ideas seriously and doing something with the bullshit that he just like throws out there. But they also are all aware that his ideas are poorly thought out or completely impossible, that they are against their own brand, or there is just such a complete lack of like any sort of existing system to support his ideas that it would be akin to starting an entire new company in order to make it happen. Just in general, he is somebody who everybody has been cowed into pretending he has good ideas and is a real intrepid thinker and businessman. And he is now this monster who believes this about himself because he grew up with such money and power that everybody around him actively participated in this lie in order to continue getting what they needed out of him. And so basically everybody is culpable in creating this monster, and all of them at the time thought that they were just managing him on behalf of whatever it was that they needed without realizing that like big picture meant that he was inevitably going to wind up in some position like he is now, believing that everything he has continued to gain is purely due to his merit and his acumen. And he just doesn't believe anybody who tries to be like, dude, these ideas are stupid and bad. You lack any self-awareness and you are completely disconnected from the reality of the world, the rest of the people you like lord it over live in. So that's how I feel about Spandam here is like, because he had CP9 at his disposal, people who are actually like intimidating, good fighters, competent, they have managed to sort of trick him into thinking that he is a badass because of them, but he doesn't really understand what because of them means. Like, he thinks that nobody will fuck with him because of what they can do, without considering that maybe separated from what they can do, you are nobody and nothing, and actually going to be probably pretty easy to deal with. Seraphim says, poor Funkfried, he's a good boy. He just needs a good home, not with scum like Spandam. Yeah, honestly, I do feel for Funkfried a lot. I really do. He seems like he relishes a good fight, but he isn't like mean-spirited about it. And the way he just sort of immediately capitulated when Frankie is like, how about you don't do this? I was like, oh, he's just scared. But, you guys, I'm sorry. Just to cap off what I was saying about Elon Musk, which I stand by every word, there is a whole thing in the movie Glass Onion, which the first of them was Knives Out, which is really good. Glass Onion is less good, but it's still pretty fun. And I, at the very beginning of the movie, was like, there's an assertion being made about this person that I feel is demonstrably untrue based on their behavior. And then you find out later, yeah, we all kind of fell for a thing because that's what we're trained to do. So check out Glass Onion. And I just really, Spandam is like an interesting villain to me because he has been so much grosser and more personally vicious and more sort of misogynistic in the way that he has attacked Robin and the way that he has flouted any sort of like actual expectations of what he do. Like I said, he's over here about to inflict a fatal wound on Robin when, as far as I know, his instructions have been explicitly to keep her alive. And I don't know that it has even occurred to him what he would do if he succeeded here and Frankie didn't step in. Like, if you did kill Robin, sir, what would you say to your superiors? Like, how would that even shake out? So anyway, the fight ends with Frankie thinking about like the day that Tom was put away and how all of that went and how he has been fantasizing about smashing Spandam's face in for such a long time. And he says something about how I want to, in the dub anyway, I want to turn your face into bloody hamburger meat. And Frankie picks up Funkfried and picks him up by the like trunk and wields him like a huge club and smashes him down onto Spandam. And there's a bunch of like cracks in the bridge. By the time it sort of, the way the illustration goes, it's like just that Spandam gets flattened and that Funkfried is laying there with his eyes whited out. And then all of a sudden cracks appear. And then all of a sudden way more cracks appear. And I started to be like, oh man, did he inadvertently just like break the entire bridge into pieces and get them stranded in the spot they're at? And these other Marines are starting to come at him. And all of a sudden, Robin off to the side, it's like she sort of comes back to herself and she's thinking about the Straw Hats and she tells him that she's ready to fight now. She's okay. And remembers when Saul told her, someday you'll have true friends who, no matter who you are or what you are, will always stand by you. And it's actually a really sweet moment where she says, this is nothing like the first time that I was in the middle of a Buster Call. I was like completely alone in a lot of ways. And this time. I've got friends. I have all of these people here that I now believe have my back, that we're going to rely on. And I just really loved that for her, this sudden moment of like, I feel at peace because there's like something to being able to believe in and rely on people. And that's the thing, like, as much as I get frustrated with like the messaging of this show, that can sometimes be just like, if you believe in something hard enough, then it'll just happen. And I don't love that message because I feel like it leads to the inevitable, it didn't happen, so you didn't believe hard enough, so it's your fault sort of thing that I know I fell for as a kid. But one thing I do really like is the teaching of like having your friends' backs in a way that is enough that they don't even have to think twice about whether or not you're going to show up for them. And this is something that people will mention as well about Luffy. Like, don't worry about Luffy. He is a badass. He will be fine. When other storylines, it might be everybody being like, oh no, we have to go and rescue Luffy. In a way that, like, as a viewer, you get sort of irritated with. You're like, when has Luffy ever not been okay? We've all been experiencing the same things. Even if you're not in the audience, you should still be able to tell by now that Luffy can take care of his own self. I really do like the fact that the show is, we will get to see the fact that his friends have that sort of confidence in him, and get to see Robin turning and suddenly being able to say with total confidence that they have her back in a way that she has literally never been able to say in her entire life, because everybody was a fuckboy. And that is just lovely. I was just so happy for her. It was like, you know, as somebody who, I have only recently started to have the kinds of friendships where I feel like people do have my back and I can rely on them, I understand what it's like to have never felt that and then all of a sudden have it proven over and over again that there are people there who care about you and are checking in and seeing how you're doing and wanting you to be okay, you know? So I just really, that moment for me with her, it hit me in a way that I wasn't expecting, just because I feel like they were very good at getting me to see what a depressing life she has led up till now and how everybody eventually either got screwed or turned their back on her. So then we go to the scene with everybody in the tunnel, and they're all washing down this tunnel and beginning to like feel like they might drown. There's a pretty funny moment. Zoro's wide awake and just angry, has his hand on his sword like he's gonna fucking stab the water. Chopper is just smiling and sort of asleep and unaware that anything's happening. And then we have Sanji, who is like talking to himself about how, I guess this is it. And I've had a pretty good life, and I'm going peacefully, knowing that I have done all that I could do. And then all of a sudden kind of coming back to himself and being like, wait, what the fuck? I don't want to die yet, which was actually pretty funny. And of course, Nami just being like, oh, okay, I can't breathe. I'm starting to pass out. And you hear this voice say, you'll be fine. Get a hold of yourselves. I'm not going to let you die. And they all get wrapped up in something and pulled. And then you see these fins. And I was like, oh my God, Kokoro is a fucking mermaid. And it made a lot of sense too, because like I have said from day one, Kokoro is real fucking weird looking. So the fact that she is a mermaid makes a lot of sense, that she is also kind of a fish person like her husband had been. And she rescues all of them. And I was so delighted by this, you guys. And then we get out of the water and we have like half an episode of everybody talking about how they're going to gouge their own eyes out and how disappointed they are at the fact that she isn't thin and hot. And it was just such a bummer. And I'm not surprised by it, because this is honestly the way so many things are written. It's just really tedious nowadays. Like, this is the exact way I would have expected this to go were I watching this 15 years ago. And I wouldn't have had any reaction to it at all. I wouldn't have felt annoyed by it. I would have just been like, well, yeah, you know, like they all expected a thing and then they didn't get it. But now, as a woman, as a fat woman, as a fat woman nearing 40, I am so over a woman who has literally saved all of your lives having to be on the receiving end of one insult after another before you fucking get your shit together enough to thank her for the fact that she saved you from drowning. I have absolutely no fucking patience for it anymore. No tolerance. It's just gone. So this was infuriating. And I was just so mad about it, because the bit of her being a mermaid is a really fun reveal and just delightful. And it just felt like they shit all over it. So much more time was dedicated to mocking her than she got to sort of be in her moment of glory saving them all. So I just was very fucking annoyed. It's such a bummer. What it turns out is that if you like reach a certain age as a mermaid, your tail splits and you can walk on land as if you have legs and feet. So if you're a younger mermaid, you do just have fins. And, she apparently, I don't know if she was just walking around on her fins in the flashbacks, because in the flashbacks, she's way, way skinnier and she's still got that weird face and everything. But I can't tell if it's supposed to be that she has her fins still. And I'm assuming she probably did have her legs, and that's how she was able to live out of water. But I don't know how that works here. So that whole thing, it was just like, it was a really cute idea that I got excited about. I'm always on board for fat mermaids. And it's just one person after another that gets to monologue about how ugly they find her and how disappointed they are. And then we have everybody finally starting to like regroup. And Chopper is awake, but he can't move at all. And I felt so bad, because this fighting begins to really pop off a little bit later, and Chopper is literally just laying there like a sitting duck. And I am so worried about him. And I'm sure he's fine. He's sort of out of the thick of things because he's up on the actual deck of this ship that they've commandeered. So he's not like on the bridge underfoot, but he can hear what's going on, and I'm sure it fucking kills him to know all of his friends are fighting the good fight right nearby, and he's over here fully conscious and able to hear everything, but he can't actually do anything about it. That's like torture. So this is when we have Zoro going up to the top. He's like climbing these steps up to the very top of this bridge. And this is the moment where all of the Franky pirates get got, while Franky, Zoro, Usopp, and Sanji sort of watch from that area. And Franky begins to realize what has happened and like freak out on behalf of his buddies. We get one brief jump back to Luffy fighting with Lucci. It's still pretty much going like it's been going. And I'm trying to make sure, because I've talked about most things in this episode. There's one dude who pops up. This was actually pretty funny. So everybody is gathered together and they're figuring out how they're going to handle what's coming next, because they've been waiting for Luffy and expecting him to be done with this fight any second. But he and Lucci are still really engaged in it. And meanwhile, the Marines are approaching from behind and they're beginning with a buster call, and they're starting to like blow the bridge up that leads to the tower that Luffy is in. Like the whole thing is starting to really heat up. So everybody is picking people that they are going to face down with. Zoro, of course, is just like, well, I'm not going to do it one by one. I'm going to take on a bunch of you all at the same time. I do really enjoy Usopp. He starts to fight with this guy who is just hammering on him with a, I think it's with a sword. And that's the part that like Usopp says something about how he isn't following the rules. That like, well, you have a sword, so you have to go and fight the sword guy. Go fight Zoro. And I did find that really funny. Just being like, well, I thought we all had an understanding here. Like, this is hardly fair. And at one point he just says, hey, look over there. And he's in his like regular goofy Usopp voice, like, hey, look over there. And then the guy looks and Usopp bashes him on the back of the head and then goes into his Sniper King voice and is like, once again, I'm the victor, or something like that. And it was really, I really, really enjoy Usopp's voice jumping back and forth between these two characters, depending on how he's feeling at the time. It's delightful. It's very, very good. Then there's the moment where Zoro has fought a bunch of guys and is like, is there anybody here with some backbone? Because he is taking everyone down, no fucking problem. And then there's like this crack as a guy drops the end of his axe onto the brick and lifts it into the air one-handed and begins to fight Zoro with the other hand that isn't holding the axe in his pocket. So it's all feels very casual. And he's grinning. He's just smiling with one hand in his pocket, swinging this axe all over the place. And at one point, when Zoro's blocked successfully a million times in a row, Zoro is just like, is that all you've got? And the guy goes into this full spin, like the fucking, he's like the Tasmanian devil, just spinning in place. And for a second, I'm thinking that this is really going to be something. And Zoro manages to like do a little trick that sends the man hurtling through the air, and he's just equalized, taken care of in like a minute. It's honestly pretty embarrassing for him. Like, that guy should be ashamed of himself. This was a whole big deal. And I love that that man, when he goes flying, he lets go of his axe. So the dude that Usopp is fighting, and he's starting to lose and panic a little bit, all of a sudden the axe falls on that dude and kills him. It's a very good bit. I really enjoyed that. And Usopp just being like, hey, perfect timing, and trying to act like this is all part of our plan, you know? It's very good. And then we have Nami. And she tells Robin to stay on the ship and says, I'll hold them back. But I couldn't help but be like, I mean, she can just stay there, but she can also hold them back. Like, you know what she's capable of. She doesn't need to leave the ship in order to handle these dudes. And it felt like, I understand Nami, like, wanting to help your friend and rush forward, but I really am like, I feel like Robin's better suited for this part. That is not to say that Nami doesn't do shit, because she conjures a bunch of, like, thunderclouds that wind up electrocuting about 2 dozen guys. There's a lot of them. And some other folks see her and they're like offended that she uses this weird weapon against us. And they say something like, "You pirate bitch," in the sub. They do not say that in the dub, I'll just mention. And come running at her. And this is when Robin says, "We fight together," and has her hands come out of all of these guys and sort of like pull them down to the ground. And I was very pleased to see that Robin, like, she doesn't stand there and argue with Nami. She just follows her. And it's like, of course, I'm not just going to stay there and let you fight for me. Like, don't be crazy. Meanwhile, on the deck, we have Chimney and Kokoro, like, yelling and waving their arms and talking about how they're just weak hostages and don't, like, everybody... They're basically trying to make themselves into a target. And I have to assume that they have a plan that they're attempting to get everybody around them and execute this plan. But I don't know what that looks like. And then at the very end of these three episodes, we go back to the fight between Luffy and Lucci. Luffy is glowing and really apparently pulling out all the stops in his attempt to fight Lucci, but he isn't effective. Lucci is just withstanding everything and barely breaking a sweat. And Lucci is speeding up and kind of, there's a real feeling of him being out of control here and desperate. And even though he, you know, is going super fast and is like, it's almost a Gatling style attack at one point. And he uses like the jet stamp, which had worked really well at another point. He kicks out, misses Lucci, who shows up right behind him. And then Lucci begins a new attack and gets Luffy like in the gut. And you see a bunch of blood go flying and you see Luffy like hit the floor and skid all the way across into a wall. And it's a bad moment. Unfortunately, this is when up on the bridge, Usopp like looks over and realizes that Lucci has been taken down and is freaking out about it, because everybody has just really been taking it for granted that if they just wait long enough, he will absolutely be able to take Lucci down and meet them there. I don't think it ever occurred to any of them that he wasn't going to win. And when he falls down and he is like twitching and his body is still giving off heat and kind of glowing, it really does look bad. It looks like he used the third gear power, or the second gear. It's, I think, the second gear. He used it for too long, or he went too hard with it and sort of wore himself out. And I don't know, my like desire here, if I were going to have my druthers, what I would want to happen is that he gets rescued by Robin. Because you guys know that, like, in the storyline with Nami, I was a little bit disappointed at the fact that I was hoping Nami was going to be the one to end up defeating the fishmen in some like, you know, just we would create a situation in which it would be possible for her, despite not having the kinds of like devil fruit powers Luffy has, that she would still manage to do it. And I was a little bit disappointed at the fact that Luffy just sort of rescues her. And I think she gets in like one last hit eventually, but it's not as satisfying as I was hoping. And considering all of this that Robin has been put through, I would really like it if Robin could do something to Lucci. And that's, you know, it's not exactly the same situation, because Robin was able to slap the shit out of Spandam. So it's not like she didn't get anything, you know, she got a little bit of a moment. But I wouldn't be mad, since she does have devil fruit powers that are actually pretty dope, if we had Luffy go down and she went and had his back instead. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Gus says the voice acting at the start of the next episode is quite good in the Japanese. Worth a listen if you want. It's probably also good in the English, too. All right. Yeah, I'll listen to both. Gus says, oh, wow, they did not use anywhere near that type of language in the sub. But yeah, it's not great. Yeah, I didn't pay attention to the sub for that section. I'll be honest. This is about the Kokoro thing, guys. But, you know, it's we at least get Sanji talking about how mermaids are supposed to be slim and have sexy bodies. And that was definitely in the sub, but I don't recall exactly how the rest of it went. Anyway, okay, so I'm going to wrap up. Thank you guys again for meeting me on an off day. Appreciate you, Bernadette, for being flexible. And until next time, toodaloo, motherfuckers.
Spoiled Network Podcast.